UK government might have shut down?
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News One Now with Roland Martin.
Good morning, I'm Roland Martin. Next on News One Now, women across the world show their power and demonstrate for gender equality, equal pay, and other issues. We'll look at the impact of a day without a woman. Congressman Elijah Cummings meets with President Donald Trump about his proposal to bring down the cost of prescription drugs. But he also gave the president an earful on his warped views of black folks, inner cities, and voter fraud. Former President Barack Obama is reportedly furious over President Trump's wiretapping allegations against him. Let's just call them lies. All while the president insists that he had no contact with Russian officials during last year's presidential campaign, which we also now know is a lie. We'll talk with Congresswoman Maxine Waters of California. Folks, dozens of black voters in Georgia get their voting rights back, and there's no evidence to back up voter fraud claims in Texas. Yo, seriously, wait till we tell y'all how many cases they presented in court to show massive voter fraud. Gotcha. We'll break down these cases with Kristen Clark, the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights. Also, folks, joining us in the show, former Secretary of Education John King, to discuss the state of public education in America. Plus, final installment of my exclusive interview with Shelby J. She opens up about the day Prince died and how he encouraged her to record her album coming out next month. It's time to bring the funk on News One Now on TV One. Folks, that was the scene from across the United States and worldwide as women took the streets yesterday and turned International Women's Day into a day without a woman. Many women boycotted work to show the power and importance of women in society. The boycott left businesses short of workers and forced some schools to close. On Capitol Hill, female lawmakers staged a walkout and joined a rally in solidarity with the Day Without a Woman protest and with the many women who were unable to take the day off from work. Obviously, there's a huge, huge issue taking place all across this country. Talking about the critical issues that women are contending with, especially while you have Donald Trump sitting in the White House, who yesterday tweeted his love and support of women, although his own actions would not necessarily show that. Yesterday, at a rally at Trump Tower in New York, three of our friends on the show, three of the organizers of the Women's March, Tamika Mallory, Linda Sarsour, and Carmen Perez, were arrested and later released. This is a photo right here, folks, of them in the paddy wagon right there after they were arrested. We also, of course, have some other photos there. Please pull it up, folks, of them being arrested. And, of course, this was all from the New York Justice League website. And then, of course, you also have this is the video last night. That's a photo of them being going to the police station. And here's a video of them actually being released from jail last night. That's a video of Tamika Mallory getting released right there. And that's Linda Sarsour right there as well. So let's talk about International Women's Day with our panel. The script, I don't know who wrote the script, they would have introduced the dude first, which makes no sense.
None whatsoever.
So really, I'm just saying to my staff, if we're gonna discuss International Women's Day, you might want to introduce the three women first, then do Ralph. I'm just saying. So, Carmen Berkeley on the far end, of course, Monique Presley here as well, Julianne Malvo, and Ralph Chittum. See, I mean, y'all, why do I have to think
because,
of
because
these...
you woke, Roland.
No, but I've been woke. And I got most of the women on my show. I don't understand why I got to figure it out. All right, so folks, so obviously, huge, huge protest all across the country. And did folks get the message?
I think they did. I mean, I was walking around outside of D.C. yesterday. A lot of folks were wearing red. Obviously, I work for labor. And for us to be able to talk about pay equity issues, to be able to talk about violence against women and how, you know, we are sexually harassed in the workplace, I do feel like a lot of people were able to exercise their voice. And at least for me, I live in Maryland. The Prince George's County schools were shut down. So I think that, that women were definitely heard yesterday.
We joked, on the show, I guess it was yesterday? No, day before yesterday, when I said white women woke. And what you have is, so you have literally women of color who are dragging white women out of their houses to make it clear to them, y'all been sitting on y'all behind for far too long. You better speak up on what's happening, because
right.
the reality is, I mean, look, I've already said it when it came to affirmative action. White women have benefited more than anybody else.
Yeah,
when it came
right.
to fighting for, they've been extremely silent. When you talk about these other issues that are out here as well. And so women of color are forcing white women in America to step up.
Except for the fact, I agree with you, Becky has to step up. I mean, it's time for Becky to, you know, basically put her diamonds down and put her marching shoes on. But at the same time, there is a race and class divide among women that this Action Day did not take into consideration. Close the Prince George's County schools. Now, who's going to take care of the kids? What happens to some of the workers? Some people would not get paid. I mean, I am the last of the living radicals. Not the last, but maybe the second to the last. And I believe in the marches and the protests, but I think in the women's movement, there has to be a lot more sensitivity to race and class differences, and class differences for the women at the bottom. We spend too much time, Roland, talking about the glass ceiling and not enough talking about the sticky floor.
Well, first of all, Monique, we had Janae Ingram on the show, and I also, when I talked to Tamika and Carmen as well, they said, look, in any movement, you had folks who said, well, if you do this, this could impact these folks here, and they actually created other avenues for women who could not take off to actually do something and be involved as well, so you're able to have folks participate in a variety of ways.
Yes, but I really believe that women have been expected to be the sensitive ones, the understanding ones, the ones that worry about what's going to happen to everyone else, so we're quiet and we don't speak up for ourselves and we don't take the action that's necessary for people to say, oh, okay, I think it's great that they had to figure out what to do with the children. I'm glad that PG County arranged for kids who would not otherwise be able to eat to be able to go to locations and get food, but teachers are the most underpaid, undervalued, overworked, necessary career in this country. So if they took the walkout seriously yesterday, I'm glad. Yeah, the education force doesn't work without them. So to me, that's a message that works. That men would strike and did and got lot more pay, got better jobs, got promotion tracks because they were willing to take that step. And I saw people who even said, well, striking should be a last resort. Well, when exactly are we going to do the last resort? It should have been 40 years ago.
I think if a teacher strike, if implemented properly, would have been wider. I mean, we had Prince George's County, we had, I believe it was Arlington,
Alexandria
in Virginia. But it would have been maximally effective if you saw teachers in 50 districts in our largest, if in Chicago, if in Detroit, the teachers were striking. So
but I
don't disagree with the notion of striking. I just always have the little footnote, and part of the footnote is how effective is it? Because a general strike is supposed to shut something down.
But here's the deal, It don't mean that can't happen
right.
2 months
right.
from now. I mean,
right.
because, so part of this deal, Ralph, is this consistent protest, this consistent cause of action, as opposed to, yeah, what took place in January, this today. The organizers, they made it clear, they're going to do more of this.
Well, and I sort of agree with Dr. Malvo. I saw this really as a movement of elite white women airing their grievances against their husbands and their bosses and not really dealing with a lot of the issues that women have to deal with on a worldwide basis. I mean, where was the speaking out against the women who are subjugated in Muslim countries under Sharia law? Where was the speaking out against the women who are subjected to genital mutilation? I mean, this was basically what I saw, a group of elite women.
Okay, hold on. You keep saying elite.
Human trafficking.
Elite women, you're not.
A group of white women who were just marching around.
They were not white, Ralph.
Most of them were.
Ralph, let me help you. Janae Ingram was a black woman
who
was on this show. Tamika Mallory is a black woman who was on this show.
Turn around. I'll look at it.
I'm not done. Hold up. Ralph, turn around.
It's right there.
Ralph, you see right there?
Hold on.
Give me a wide shot.
Yeah.
Give me a wide shot. Ralph, three of the male organizers. Now one of them white.
Yeah.
That's black. Muslim, Latino. So,
and how are you going to have a movement that's supposed to be promoting women, and then you have someone there who promotes Sharia law, which is the most subjective?
She does not promote Sharia law. Oh my God. Oh my Lord.
You are absolutely wrong on that.
For someone do that and then say I'm supporting women.
Wow.
Women can't go out by themselves.
Ralph, you are absolutely wrong.
They can't drive in Saudi Arabia.
We know that. We're not in Saudi
without a husband. And then
but
this
she
issue
has
isn't even addressed
so
on the day of
her?
Women.
You're going to put that onto her? You're wrong. You're absolutely wrong. And the fact is that women all over
discussed.
The globe were also.
The International Day of Women is one thing, but what they did in this country is not.
One second. Go right ahead.
International Women's Day has been recognized since 1908. Soviet women came out in the streets in 1913. We have seen women all over the world. In Europe, women came out against World War I in 1914. We've seen women consistently come out. And so while I have my footnote, I support the women's action, and I don't think it's fair for you to say that Linda Secor is supporting oppression against women. Nothing could be further from the truth.
Does she actually promote racial justice?
Sharia?
No, what she does is she advocates for racial justice, for gender
Sharia?
Justice. She actually has been working with Tamika and Carmen to create the New York Justice League. She's actually probably done more for black people and communities of color than a lot of other people have.
Here's the deal. What we're not going to do is go down your rabbit hole. The reality is this here. The issues that you say should have been talked about
were talked about. Yeah, absolutely.
Were highlighted. Were part of the agenda. Ralph, what you just said is a lie. It's a lie. It's not a falsehood. It's not a misunderstanding. It's a lie.
Is it always
so,
fact?
Ralph,
I wasn't there.
Hold on, right there. You just said I wasn't there. Ralph, if you watched this show, you would have heard those same women discuss on this show what the issues are.
Maybe you should watch the black news
and then you would know what the real issue is because the very organizers we have had on this show. Go ahead.
But they're also trying to support equality of pay. They're trying to support the woman's right to her own body. And the things that you're saying that they would not speak out against is a part of the platform that's right there available on the website. I think the only thing that's fair for the people who are viewing You Speak, Me Speak, All of Us Speak is, you know, and a message to our president while we're at it, if you don't know, don't say. Because it's not fair to these women who are working really hard to say that from the time they started this march through this next step, that they're not supporting an international platform for women when they are. That's exactly what they're trying to do.
When you say
they are articulating it, but you have to.
Hold on, I'm sorry. Wait a minute. The women's march, last I checked, was it not the largest one-day march in history?
In history.
So how is it not coming through?
Wait, which march are you talking about?
The women.
Oh, my God.
I was talking about the one yesterday or the one in January.
The same women who organized the one in January.
This is
organized yesterday.
What happened yesterday.
Right, that's why I was trying to understand what you were talking about.
The women's march happened in January. I mean, the only thing I've seen greater than that was the Million Man March.
Right.
The only thing I've seen greater than that.
Right.
You could not move on these streets. There had to be a million people there. It was an astounding and resounding success.
And I
coming behind this, I agree with you, Monique, this is another step. And so we're going to see, this is going to evolve. And I know that these young women, and I'm very proud of them, are going to keep it going. But, you know, when you say, if you don't know, don't talk, You never hear a Republican open their mouth
truly
again in
silence.
All right, folks, hold up. I'm going to shift to the next story. Yesterday, Congressman Elijah Cummings went to the White House, met with Donald Trump, talked about lowering prescription drugs, but also talked about some other stuff involving black folks. Here's what he had to say after their meeting.
I said to him, Mr. President, most respectfully, when you're talking about the African-American community, I want you to realize that all African-American communities are not places of depression and where people are being harmed. As a matter of fact, I let him know that I've been living in the inner city of Baltimore for some 35 years in the same house, and that I think it would be good for him to acknowledge that most African-American people are doing very, very well. And that certainly we all welcome his efforts to improve our communities.
Now, of course, we tried to get Congressman Elijah Cummings on the show today, or we're not able to do so. So we'll try to get him on the show tomorrow. But we do have right now Congresswoman Maxine Waters. I want to talk to her about that. Also ask her another question, though, that's critically important. Congresswoman Waters, you there?
Yes, I'm here. Good morning.
So I got to ask you about that. Your colleague met with Trump, talked about prescription drug bills, and tried to give him a little black history during Women's History Month. And so seems like between him and of course, Secretary Ben Carson, when it comes to slavery and immigrants, and then, of course, when it comes to Betsy DeVos, who thought school choice was how HBCUs were created, Lord, we might need exhume Carter G. Woodson and place him at the White House next to Frederick Douglass to educate this White House when it comes to black folks.
Wow. That's a great way of putting it. Obviously, whatever has happened in Trump's upbringing, his education, his history, he doesn't know about or care about black people. He has a history and a record of discrimination, of making unkind, untrue remarks about black people. So I don't trust him. I don't expect that he's going to change. And I'm not interested in talking to him about it. I'm not his professor. I'm not his mother. I'm not his anything to train him and to teach him about black people. We must recognize that this man is without the kind of history that, you know, can help him to understand how to have an appreciation for various cultures and individuals. He is a man that does not really respect others in general, and he certainly has no real respect for black people.
Now, I gotta ask you this here. For the longest, Donald Trump said, I did not meet with any Russians at no time whatsoever. He accused President Obama of tapping his phones, has not offered any proof whatsoever. Now, all of a sudden, the White House is admitting, after the Wall Street Journal reported, that he did indeed meet with the Russian ambassador last year, warmly embraced him when he saw him, and so now we have another lie from this president.
It's constant. It's constant. He's been lying all throughout the campaign. He's been lying since he's been president of the United States. The journalists and media are constantly now calling the president of the United States a liar. That is so unusual, but it is happening because it's true. Not only does he lie, he will change the lie several times. He is, in my opinion, involved with the Kremlin, with Putin, with the Russians, many of those around him. And I've said this over and over again in many of the interviews that I've done. I started early on with my understanding about his connection to the Russians and to Putin, you know. And I'm pleased that people are catching up with this, because when you take a look at his allies around him, and all you have to do is start with his campaign manager, Manafort. Manafort was his campaign manager while he had a contract with the Ukraine. And when we talk about the Ukraine, we're talking about that side of the Ukraine that's connected to Putin. He had a contract with that ex-president who's now in exile over in Moscow. And, of course, whether it's Roger Stone or whether it's Manafort or Flynn, or whether it's several of the others around him, they all have these oil and gas connections. They are intent on lifting the sanctions. The sanctions is what is keeping Putin from drilling for oil in the Arctic. The contract or the negotiation, the agreement between Exxon and Putin to drill in the Arctic is what's driving a lot of this. And whether you're talking about Tillerson, who's the Secretary of State, or some of the others that I have just alluded to, they're all really about lifting the sanctions. That's why they want President Trump there, so that he can approve of lifting the sanctions and turn a blind eye to the aggression of Putin and the Kremlin and the ways that they have gone into Crimea and to ways that they want to go into other parts of the old Soviet Union. And so, yes, he has met with the Russian ambassador. Yes, if they dig and drill down, they're going to find that there was a lot of contact with the Russians because they have agreements. They undermined our campaign in an effort to have Trump and to make sure that Hillary Clinton did not get elected. We got to find out exactly how they did it, what they did, and if we can get an independent investigator, we'll find out. Trump is connected to, has interacted with, and many of those around him have interacted with the Kremlin and with Putin.
All right. Congresswoman Waters, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Welcome.
All right, then. That's right. They call her Auntie Maxine
Auntie
all
Maxine.
On social
yes,
media,
hero.
Jacking folks up. All right, folks, we come back on News 1 Now. We'll talk about the issue of voting rights as dozens of black Georgia voters get their rights restored. And critics can't find evidence of voter fraud in Texas. How shocking. Next, News 1 Now on TV One.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News 1 Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Dozens of black voters in Georgia will get their voting rights back after they were snatched from the voting rolls. The move concludes a dispute between Hancock County and the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights. County officials sent sheriff's deputies to summon black voters to appear before them and prove they lived in the county. Because of the action, it said the board deemed ineligible more than 5% of the city's 988 registered voters. The Lawyers Committee said the methods violated the law and now the county has agreed to a settlement. Also, folks, let's talk about what happens in Texas. So this is interesting. Of course, Texas is being sued when it comes to the issue of voter ID law. Well, guess what? They file evidence in court that is unbelievably weak. They laid out that in a span of about 12 years, guess how many cases of voter fraud they found? 12. Let me say it again. In an effort to prove voter fraud, they presented 12 cases in court. Here with us, Christian Clark with the Lawyers Committee. So, Christian, this is interesting to me. First of all, the Georgia case is crazy, where literally they were sending folks to someone's house. Are you registered? I mean, that's the level of it, voter intimidation. We harken back to the 60s.
That's exactly right. This is old-fashioned, old-school voter suppression at work. What elected officials undertook here was a so-called effort to clean up the registration rolls. And in that process, they removed virtually all of the people removed were legitimately registered African-American voters. They deployed the sheriff's office to people's homes. The sheriff would knock on your door and say, you are being summoned to come down and provide proof of your continued eligibility. Needless to say, this had a chilling effect throughout the community. There was a whistleblower on the ground who caught wind of what was happening. He was attending local meetings where they weren't really recording or publicizing what was happening, and he realized that something was afoot. So he went out, bought a recorder, and started documenting these meetings where they were stripping black voters from the rolls. He contacted a local advocate who in turn called the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights under law, and we filed suit. There was just no way to turn a blind eye to what was happening here. What I hate about this is a poor rural part of Georgia, a community that is off the beaten path, and these are the places sometimes where we see the ugliest voter suppression tactics today. We need people to speak up when these efforts are playing out in their communities. We have folks here in Washington, D.C., who claim that vote fraud is what we need to contend with in our country when there is ugly voter suppression like this happening all over the country.
Now, the Texas case is utterly hilarious because they've been asserting, oh, massive voter fraud all across the...
You know,
12 cases in about a decade. 25 million folks there, they found 12.
Now, they found 12 cases and unclear whether those were actually confirmed and people convicted. The reality is that there is a 0.0003% chance that you'll see vote fraud play out in elections, greater chance that you'll be struck by lightning than commit vote fraud. The state of Texas over the last 3.5 years has wasted millions of taxpayer dollars defending what is, at the end of the day, the most discriminatory voter ID law of its kind. Court after court after court has found that Texas's voter ID law discriminates against African American and Latino voters. The real data shows that there's 600,000 people who were disenfranchised the moment that they put that law in place. We are fighting this law in courts. The Justice Department has turned its back on us and has pulled out. Right now, we're at a critical point in the case where we're telling the court that this law was adopted with a discriminatory purpose. That's critical because that would render the law unconstitutional, null and void, not get out completely, and take the wind out of the sails that we're seeing around the country to put photo ID laws in place.
Ralph, if your party gonna keep saying massive voter fraud, you might want to come up with more than 12 cases.
Oh, absolutely. And going back to the ID, I mean, I agree. You know, the college IDs, that should be an acceptable form of identification for someone to vote. Excuse me.
But that gun permit is okay.
And I was getting ready to say that. If a gun permit is good enough ID, then a student ID, and as you have said previously, especially if you go to the state system, that's an ID that's issued by the state because it's a state university.
But it doesn't qualify under Texas's scheme.
Right. But
everybody
I'm
knows
with you. I'm saying
the,
it should.
Yeah. But not the case. Texas's law is, there are certain forms of ID. It is all about locking out black folks, Latino folks, the elderly, students. Women are impacted as well.
Monique, we will have on Monday, we're going to have the Alabama Secretary of State, the one who championed the voter ID law there as well. That's going to be fun. Again, same thing here. What you have here, you have Republicans who all of a sudden, after the election of Obama in 2008, oh my goodness, voter fraud, we've got to have ID. The voter ID plan was executed after the election of Obama. This is all tied to his election, period.
No, and it was not veiled. You know, there was a concerted effort by conservatives across this country. They planned to do everything they could. That's why redistricting is such a critical issue, just like the vote suppression issue. They're wrapped together because they set out to ensure that they could keep off the rolls as many Democratic voters as possible. And that, as Kristen said, directly affects the elderly, the poor, people of color. It is ridiculous when we have a country in this last election where half of us decided not to show up at the polls, that what we think we're supposed to be worried about is voter fraud. And I really do believe it's a level of ignorance in our country where people just don't understand how much of an issue this still is today.
So one thing that we can do in our community, and actually the AFL-CIO and the Lawyers Committee and many other organizations in D.C. are actually working on, how do we ensure that black folks are serving as poll monitors, as poll workers? The reason why this is able to happen is oftentimes you have, you know, older people that might be retired. They've been working as poll workers and poll monitors for quite some time. That works in places like where I live in Maryland, but perhaps in a place like Georgia or Texas where they have a history, of racism, it's something that we have to work on in the black community.
All right, then. Kristen, keep fighting the fight.
Thank you.
All right, folks, we come back on News One Now. A new bill in Kentucky could set their public schools back to being segregated. Are we shocked? Also, Republicans in Congress are proposing to overturn laws put in place by President Obama to improve low-performing schools. We'll talk with the former Secretary of Education, John King, about why this is detrimental to minority students. This is News One Now on TV One.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
Lord, Ralph, Republicans in Kentucky. Lord, pray for them. They passed a bill that will resegregate public schools in the state's largest county. If the bill passes in the Kentucky State Senate, it will allow Jefferson County students to attend schools that are closest to their homes. With busing and magnet programs under the current system, Jefferson County has been able to maintain a diverse school system for more than 40 years. It is considered one of the most diverse districts in America. But this new bill will perpetuate deeply segregated housing patterns that will be reflected in the school system, concentrate poor minority students to schools set apart from their white and affluent peers, and the specialty magnet programs at those schools. Joining us on the phone to talk about this, Kentucky State Representative Dara Owens, and also in studio, former Secretary of Education and CEO of the Education Trust, John King, Jr. Representative Owens, I got to ask you, why all of a sudden this is a deal?
I have not a clue. This came from, I was going to say left field, but I think right field would be more appropriate. I have no idea. There's been no interest expressed in this bill. It was just filed, and there hasn't been a great deal of support for it. As a matter of fact, the guy who introduced it had a meeting in his district, and he caught sand for it. So I have no idea why he felt the need to do this in view of the great diversity program we have here in Louisville, Jefferson County.
Secretary King, again, this is one of those solutions in search of a problem.
Oh, absolutely. It's a terrible idea. Louisville is a place that has been committed to school diversity, and now they're going to go backwards. And it also reveals that all the talk about local control maybe isn't as genuine as you might think. This is the state actually telling the local community, stop making your schools diverse.
Representative Owens, what about that? Because, I mean, that is an issue. We see the same thing in North Carolina, where you have these states who want to tell cities, oh, no, you can't set your own minimum wage standard. But I thought they loved local control.
Well, you know, you have to understand that the Republicans did what we call flip the House for the first time in many, many years. And they now have control, and they have the power. But they always talk about local control. And then here they come with a bill that's going to impair that and tell local communities what they can do, because Big Brother knows best. We know better how to run the school system than the local board.
Ralph, your thoughts about that? Why do we keep seeing this, where Republicans all of a sudden get in control, and then again, talk local, then want to keep imposing things on municipalities when nobody asked for it?
Well, with this thing with the school system, I mean, I agree. I mean, for schools, the best decision making for the school is as close as you can get to that local community. So I agree with you, and I don't understand why you would have, you know, the state trying to come in. I mean, I understand you want to have statewide standards in education, you know, curriculum, you know, all that kind of stuff. But a lot of these decisions are really best kept as close as you can to the people at the local level, you know, at the county school boards. So, you know, I'm with you on this one. It doesn't.
As Secretary King, what was interesting to me, look, I went to magnet schools, elementary school, middle school, and high school. And I get it when I hear people say neighborhood schools. I never had an issue hopping on the bus. If you're telling me, I like the nice, wonderful, if this school in my neighborhood, if they all should be high performing, but if you're telling me I get to go to a high performing school, I don't care how long it takes me to get on the bus, I'm ready to roll.
That's right, and that's what all the parents in Louisville are saying. They're saying we want our schools to be diverse. We want the ability to choose magnet schools that reflect the particular interests of our kids. And here you have the state legislature trying to take that away from them.
Right, but what we're having here, well, first of all, it's so good to be sitting next to a real Secretary of Education. Bless you. But then,
shame.
but on this issue, look, they're trying to now, at the local level, legalize segregation again so that we can override federal standards. The reason the federal government had to step in the first place is so that they could not legally segregate and separate students. And I feel like I'm more Republican these days than the Republicans. Like, there's an identity crisis of some sort, because everywhere where you used to have states' rights and where they used to want states' rights, right, now in power, they're saying, no, we don't need those anymore. It's ridiculous.
These folks have been emboldened by the Trump victory to come out with their racist nonsense, that's all. And they have been exposed as the hypocrites they are. They say they believe in choice, but that's unless a woman wants to choose the right to have an abortion. They say they believe in local control, but that's unless they want to reintroduce racism. So they basically are sitting at the heaps of hypocrisy, and the challenge is that these states, they get contagious. So you see one do it, and the next one is going to do it, and the next one is going to do it. So really, I commend the legislator
That's the Alex strategy.
Exactly. Wow. I commend the legislator on the phone, and basically, he'll think this has to be fought. And like Monique, I'm so happy to be with an educated Secretary of Education.
Representative Owens, 20 seconds here. So do you believe this thing is going to pass or fail?
Well, I'm reading this morning's paper. They're saying in the Senate it may languish. I don't have a clue as to whether to pass. No, like I say, you have Republicans in control here. It's sort of like Washington. You just don't know what's going to happen. They seem to operate on the seat of the pants, and it doesn't appear to be a program or a plan. They just do things.
And, all right. All right, well, we'll be watching to see what happens. Thanks a lot, sir.
I'm going to go out on a limb. It's not going to pass.
All right, then. Well, we'll see. Call some of your Republican buddies down there and say, get your butt in order. All right, y'all, next on News 1 Now, we'll talk about the effects of removing regulations that hold public schools accountable to providing a quality education for all students. Also, the last part of my interview with Shelby J, as she talks about how she coped with the loss of Prince and how she used the wisdom he shared with her to produce her new album. 19 before top of the hour, News 1 Now on TV 1.
Your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America.
I don't bend, I don't break.
It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
Congress is ready to overturn regulations for holding schools accountable under the Every Student Succeed Act, or ESSA. President Barack Obama signed the bipartisan bill in law in 2015 to ensure all students received a quality education. Republicans claim the rules represent an executive overreach. Democrats say rescinding the rules will open loopholes to hide or ignore schools that fail to adequately serve poor children and minorities. Republican Senator and Chair of the Education Committee, Lamar Alexander, introduced a resolution in February to overturn regulations that were implemented to improve low-performing schools.
Congress said to the department, you cannot tell states exactly what to do about fixing low-performing schools. That's a state decision. But this regulation does that anyway. And Congress said to the department, you cannot tell states exactly how to rate the public schools in your state. But this regulation does that anyway.
All right, let's break it down. Former Education Secretary John King and CEO of the Education Trust. All right, so you can't tell states what to deal with low-performing schools? Let's just keep them?
Apparently. I mean, this is much like the Louisville situation where you're going backwards on school desegregation. This is going backwards on a civil rights law. The original version of this law was passed in 1965 as a civil rights law. The idea was that the federal government needs to be active in ensuring that states pay attention to the performance of all students, particularly low-income students, students of color. And what you're seeing in Congress is a retreat from those principles.
So when he says, we said don't do it, but you did it anyway, is he right?
No, I think he's reinterpreting the history of this law and even of the agreement that was reached when the president signed the law. The president said when he signed the law, this is a civil rights law. I'm signing this law because I want to make sure states continue to make progress in serving the students who are most vulnerable. And that's what the regulations tried to advance, and now they're trying to undo that.
And I think what's particularly egregious is, you know, our new Secretary of Education, we already know that they are not here to, not only are they not here to take care of students, they're not here to take care of parents. I mean, I think our even bigger concern is what's going to happen to all of these loans that are actually being serviced through the Department of Education. And I think it's a cop-out to say send it back to the states, because we already know that some of our states are not doing their job to make sure that these young people are actually being educated in the way they need to be. So saying send it back to the states, to me, is actually a dog whistle.
What's happening here is the same as what happened with the VRA. We look at how a civil rights law can be deconstructed over time. We have to keep the pressure on. I mean, there's no way that just because, and I wish anyone who's looking could share the word with people who are not informed. Look, wake up, because little by little, they're encroaching upon protections that the civil rights movement, Dr. Malveaux knows personally, people died so that these children could have a quality education. And now they're trying to undo that.
I just think she said you old, but go right ahead. That was the way she threw it out there. Go ahead.
I said she was
okay, gotcha. I got you.
I don't take any offense. I mean, I was supposed to be dead a long time ago, according to some folks, and talked enough mess to have been. But let me say this. When we look at the human resource needs of our country in the long run, we must look at what our education system is producing. We have this president talking about creating jobs and doing this and doing that, and yet you're undermining the foundation of intellectual development by saying we're going backwards. And so we've seen progress. Now, you know, disabled students are going to have challenges. Students of color are going to have challenges. We're going to have all these challenges that are a function of simple meanness that is being generated by some ignorant people.
Secretary King, how do we mobilize people to stop this?
Well, folks need to reach out to Congress today. There's a vote today that will likely set these regulations back. Then the next step, if the regulations are overturned, is to work in states and to demand that states pay attention to how their students of color are doing, how their low-income students are doing, that they make opportunity available in every school. It shouldn't be that some schools offer calculus and chemistry and physics and other schools don't. It shouldn't be that some schools have school counselors and other schools have law enforcement officers. And that's what folks need to organize around.
All right. Well, keep giving them hell.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it. Thanks a bunch. Folks, when we come back on News One Now, Shelby J talks about what that day was like when she found out that her mentor, Prince, had died. That's next. News One Now on TV One.
Your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America.
I don't bend, I don't break.
It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
Folks, Prince died in April of last year, and for Shelby J, it was stunning when she got the word that her mentor had passed. Here is the last part of our exclusive conversation.
This is an ABC News special report.
And we are coming on the air right now with the breaking news that the pioneering musician Prince has died at the age of 57.
CNN has now confirmed that the artist Prince is dead.
Prince has died at his home in suburban Minneapolis.
April 21st.
Yeah.
Walk us through that day.
That day, I was at home in North Carolina, and I was working out of my neighborhood, walking in the morning, and I don't even remember who texted me first, but I walked back home, and I got home, and my mom knew. I told her, I said, something's up, something's wrong at Paisley. Something's wrong with Prince. And then my phone started ringing, and I found out that he was gone, and I didn't want to believe it. And it just felt like it felt like my chest exploded. It felt like my chest exploded, and I went numb. And I just let loose, and I was like, this is real. He's gone, and I don't know everything, but I gotta go. And my mom came, and I was, it's kind of like all I remember for a minute, because I was on the floor. It just hurt so bad. I loved him so much, and he loved me so much. And it just hurt. It hurt a lot, you know, and I couldn't, I didn't even know what to say, you know, and there were like news cameras, you know, showing up at the house, like maybe an hour. It was I've never experienced anything like this in my life. And I didn't know even what to do. And my manager, thank God for her, for putting out fires, because it's like, to a lot of people, you know, Prince was a huge star to them, and I get their interest and I get them wanting to talk about it. I understand that. But, you know, when my daddy died, I didn't want to talk about it that night either. You know, I'm grieving, and you have to give a person time to grieve. Everyone grieves differently. And respectfully, for people that could talk and could do things, that's cool. But my relationship with Prince was that where it felt, like I said, like someone just ripped my heart out of my chest. I didn't know what to say, and I couldn't talk. There was nothing to talk about. It was just I just had to grieve. I had to cry. I had to, just for days, you know, I had to just cry and just be alone and with my family and just try to figure this out, because he was such a big part of my world. So he was a major part of not just my work life, but of my life, my real life. You know, he would check on mama and ask me about my sisters by name, you know. So it was like losing a family member. That's how it felt, like I felt when my daddy died. That's how it felt.
And for a long time, I mean, long time, you just could not talk about any of this.
No, it was just too, it was too difficult to talk about without crying and just being a mess, because I had to process it and I had to pray over it. Prince comes to me in my dreams quite often. I remember that night he was in my dream. He comes to me often, and he speaks to me, he tells me things, and it's not a weird, scary thing. It's a beautiful thing. It makes me still feel connected with him. There was no blueprint to it. I didn't, you know, until you go through something like this, nobody can, you know, there's no blueprint for it. But I'm on the other side of it now, and I'm thankful, like I said, for my faith and my family. And he's still with me. You know, he's still with me. He's always in my heart.
You also went through the emotional roller coaster when we found out how he died. And I talked to so many people who were close to him, and they said, I simply had no idea.
People go through things and you don't even know, because you're not there with them like that. But when it comes to that, I trust God in all things, not just things I understand. Most importantly, and mama, most importantly, the things that I don't understand, the things I can't wrap my brain around, that's when you have to trust him the most. And when you say you trust him and you give it to him, you got to let it go. You can't trust him and still be like, but what about this God and what about that God? It's like, nope, I trust you in all things. You brought my brother Prince home. He did what he was supposed to do on this earth while he was here. Now he's everywhere. He's in the sun, the wind, the air. He's everywhere around us. I trust you. It was his time, and I'll see him, you know, on the other side.
It is interesting when you talk, what you just said about the kind of folks he liked. He was an avid news person.
Yeah, he was.
And so, yeah, he knew who certain folks were and what they talked about.
Yeah.
They also rub off on you, where he was kind of like, yeah, you got to watch the news.
Oh, yeah. But you have to understand the world that you're living in. And, you know, like Nina Simone said, an artist's goal is to reflect the times that we're living in. So the stuff that I'm even writing now, the stuff for this album is written, but the stuff that I'm writing now is reflecting these times, and there's some turbulent stuff going on. And if you're not aware, you don't have a clue. How can you even write about, what are you writing about, rims? What are you writing, you know, what is that? So you need to understand it about what's going on in the world. And he was highly intelligent. People don't understand how smart this man was. Prince was one of the smartest people I ever met in my life. And not just smart about music, but smart about religion. He was well informed about so many different things and wanted us to be as well. He's like, you need to read this book, you need to watch this movie, understand how all of this works so that you are the boss of you and that you're not subject to all this other stuff because you're uninformed, you know, and uneducated.
Do you think people in music, and certainly the general public, mm-hmm. really have no idea about his brilliance?
I think they're learning now, which I love. I don't think they really knew. A lot of people didn't even know Prince was the musician that he was. Now, all of that music, he's gonna live on forever. And we're gonna make sure of it, and Shelby J is going to make sure of it, that people understand and remember him for not how he died, but how he lived and what he left behind for all of us and all the gifts that he gave us and that roadmap that he laid out in his lyrics for us to know how to treat each other, how to love one another, how to just be good and be kind and to what matters.
Why is this called 10?
Wow, 10 was my number. I was born on the 10th day. I'm a Virgo, September 10th. 10 has always been my number. My father was born on the 10th, and Prince was into numbers. His number was 7. So for me, 10 is Shelby's number. But I want you to listen to my music and feel good. I want you to feel good about yourself. I want you to feel good about your life that you're living and understand if you make a mistake, if you fall in a hole, you get back up, you dust yourself off, and you keep it moving. And that's how I want people to feel when they listen to that music. So I want them to feel like they're a 10. So yeah, 10.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number 2, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
Birthday shout out time. Bow Wow turns 30. I remember he was talking about politics and stuff. He's supposed to meet with me. He still ain't called. Bow Wow, you might want to pick that phone up, bruh. I'm just saying. NBA player Matt Barnes turned 37. Don't fight nobody today, Matt. Actor Emmanuel Lewis turns 46 on this day in the history. 1841, Amistad slave ship mutineers are freed by the Supreme Court. 1891, North Carolina A&T University founded in Greensboro, North Carolina. In 66, Andrew Bremer becomes the first black member of the Federal Reserve. Tomorrow, Gerald Albright with us all day. My frat, I got to go. How?
So you want the truth. Well, we got it.
That's how I talk. God knows it. I'm just straight.
It's News One Now.